I was sent a copy of the book, and I have read it from cover to cover because I think it's absolutely fascinating. But being asked to come back today is really rather strange.
And have you been back to Bletchley?
Oh, yes, I have. I've been to three of the reunions, only three. And I also came back when Colossus was rebuilt and the Duke of Kent came to switch it on. And quite a group of us came back then to sort of look at it. And I was just saying a moment ago, actually, that looking at the machine, it was so familiar, having worked on it, you know, hour after dreary hour. We looked at it and not a single one of us could remember precisely what we did. We could all remember odd little bits. And one person would say, oh, we used to do so-and-so over there. Did we? I'm sure I never did that. And we did. No, I remember we used to do something up there, you know, this horrible great front of the machine. And other people didn't remember. So it was all rather strange because, I mean, we were bound for life, never to mention it. So I think your brain just doesn't bother to hold on to anything. It's no good even sort of lying in bed reminiscing to yourself because it doesn't mean a thing. So I think most of us, all of us, I should imagine, couldn't remember.
I think that's the thing. Most of the ladies that we talk to say exactly the same thing. I think because it was so set in your mind that you were never going to be able to talk about this, you didn't need to remember it, did you? And straight after the war, you had a life to get on with because you'd put your life on hold, hadn't you, really?
I suppose that's the point, yes.
Working on Colossus, I suppose it was more the environment you would remember, the poor lighting and the smell and things.
The smell, the hard floor, the permanent electric light, because that blackout was always over the windows, and general heat, because, I mean, with all those valves and so on, it gave up quite a bit of heat.
We've interviewed a couple of ladies, and one, I think, she started having really bad headaches. She'd had to go off into convalescence because of the lights.
I'm not surprised, yes. Not a bit surprised. We all had to have good eyesight. There were no glasses or anything like that. And we all had to be a certain height to be able to reach up and do things.
Oh, of course, yeah.
But apart from that, I think they said you should have taken school cert with a credit in maths. Well, that was a total waste of time. You didn't need a credit in maths or anything else. But anyway, I suppose that just meant you'd had a certain length of education, at least, you know, minimum. But
so in reality, you were one of the world's first computer operators.
And last in my case, I've got a computer. Well, I suppose we were. We didn't know that at the time. It didn't mean anything to us. It was just this machine was called Colossus and we worked. All these other things have come out much, much later. In fact, I'm still learning heaps all the time.
Well, we are. The part of the museum is all the time we're learning things, and we learn things from people like you. That's the importance of capturing these stories of people like you. Because
it's too late. Yes.
Well, unfortunately, yes. And a lot of our lovely veterans say that, you know, you've got to hurry up now.
I know.
But, you know, you're all so willing to share these stories with us, and it's just so we can teach the next generation, really, isn't it?
Well, yes, it is, yes. And I do think it's important that the memory should go on and not be wiped out, because it really was terribly important to the war effort.
Well, that's the fundamental reason that Bletchley Park is here, is so we can keep your stories alive of what you people did for us and the service that you gave to your country.
Yes, yes. Of course, it was never ever called Bletchley Park in those days. It was Station X and that was that, yes.
Which is the same as a few weeks ago we went down to a memorial plaque being opened at Eastcote, at the bomb, the outstation.
Yes,
and all the ladies know that as Pembroke 5.
That was the Wrens, you see. Although we were nowhere near the Navy or anything else, we had to have our pay accounts held in a ship. I mean, every shore establishment was a ship. And ours was HMS Pembroke 5. I mean, it wasn't a place, it wasn't anything. It was just where all our records were kept.
It was the same. My stepfather was Fleet Air Arm, and I couldn't understand why he'd been on an HMS Kestrel and HMS something else. And then I did a bit of investigation, and they were land bases. And a lot of people don't realise that.
No, everywhere was HMS something. In fact, if you walked out of the gate of your establishment, you were ashore. And when you came back, you were back on board. And you wouldn't say to your friend, you know, what time did you come in last night? You'd say, what time did you come off? Meaning offshore, you see.
And even in your billets, everything was...
Everything was naval.
And where were you billeted?
Woburn Abbey.
And did you have a nice part of Woburn Abbey or one of the less
nice parts of Woden Abbey.
Well, I don't know if they're any less nice. I mean, they had stripped out all the furniture, carpets and pictures. It was just a bare, bleak stone building where we clattered up and down stone stairs and all that sort of thing. And there was no heat, and we slept right up under the roof, where it was terribly hot and terribly cold and terribly crowded, because they managed to fit... We all slept in double-decker bunks in those days, and they managed to fit four double-decker bunks into what would have been probably a maid's bedroom up under the roof. And there was just no space at all. Luckily, eight of us all got on well together. If we hadn't, it would have been sheer hell.
You had to, didn't you,
yeah,
really?
You had to. We did. And some of us became such friends that we met forever after, once a year in London. We all got together and had good old natter.
I think most of the veterans that I've spoken to, it's the same. Because you were all forced together,
yes,
those friendships that you made then,
yes,
you kept for life.
Absolutely for life. And we were more like sisters than just friends. We knew all about each other's wives, and we'd gone through our lives together. You know, who'd got engaged, who was having a baby, who was, you know, the whole thing. And, of course, sadly now, one's died and one's got dementia and one's in a wheelchair, so our little crowd have rather shriveled. Yes, so...
What did you do after the war?
Well, I stayed on in the Wrens. In fact, I served for 8 years altogether. And I only left then because I got married. And as I married somebody in the Navy, and the Admiralty wouldn't let husbands and wives serve in the same place, bad for discipline, you know. So if you were never going to see him again, what was the point of marrying the man, you know? So you left promptly.
And what did you do in the Wrens after the war?
Well, immediately afterwards, some of us were going to go to Ceylon, and we got literally to the eve of sailing. It was troop ships, of course, then, not flying, when it was put off. And we were told, yes, you will go, but not yet, so we had to wait. And we did pretty well nothing for about 4 months. And then they said they wanted less people, and I and my particular friends never went. So then we had to change again to something else, and we became what were known as pay writers, which meant you worked in a pay office. And I worked in one at Chatham, which was set up to deal with men being demobbed, because every naval rating had a home port.
Yes.
And to be demobbed, they all came back to their home port. So all their papers, their pay, everything came back to us, and we had to sort of sort it out, and they got their demob suits from one thing and another, and then walked out of the gate.
You and your friends must have been very popular. Finally getting those men out of service.
Well, you didn't notice it, but maybe we were.